Blog Talk Radio.
How would you like to get the inside scoop on the secret sauce of show business? Imagine being ahead of the pack when it comes to knowing how to land that part you crave in that film, play, or TV program. Listen to the Inside Acting Radio Show hosted by William Powell, the king of DC media, at blogtalkradio.com. Search Inside Acting.
Good evening, dear listeners. Welcome to this episode of the Inside Acting Radio Show, in which I speak with Reynaldo Piniella, who played in the fantastic Thoughts of a Colored Man, and that is a fantastic play that is playing now at Center Stage. You can get the tickets if you go to centerstage.org. So let me read a little bit about it. Thoughts of a Colored Man is a poetic journey through the lives of seven black men over the course of a day in Brooklyn, New York. Playwright Kenan Scott II has written, and Steve H. Brodnax III has directed a show that is both narrative and poetry, depressive and comic, without being preaching. When a play this outstanding, all races and sexes can relate to the emotions displayed on stage. Thematically, Thoughts of a Colored Man wages battle against inaccurate and superficial images of black men in America. As Brodnax wrote, "As a man of color, I know too well that these distorted images have the dangerous potential to limit our humanity." So I see that Reynaldo is on the line. I'm going to bring him on the air. Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
Man, it's great to have you on. So I know your character was named Lust, and a lot of the characters in the play, well, all of the characters really had allegorical names, like things like lust and anger. So what's been some of the reaction to your character from audiences?
You know, it's really amazing to see how the response to my character varies night by night. The other day we had a large church group in the audience, and they had a really negative response to my character, because if you see the show, you'll see I'm using some really vivid language about women and the things I would do to their bodies. And, you know, some days we have a lot of young kids, and the young kids hear me curse and say certain things, and they react with laughter. But I think what's really amazing is that at the end of the evening, once they see the full spectrum of what my character goes through and has gone through, they really see young black men in a new light, and they also have their preconceptions challenged. So I think it's been really amazing just to, like, experience the play anew each and every night.
Yeah, that's amazing how different characters look at the character differently. I mean, they have, you know, like I say, if it's religious background, they look at it one way. You know, young people look at it a different way. It's amazing that you get different responses like that.
Yeah, and it's been interesting to see the different response from Syracuse to Baltimore. The first stop in our run was in Syracuse, you know, which is very different demographically from Baltimore. And I feel like now that the word has gotten out in Baltimore, we've been getting an audience that's more reflective of the faces you see on stage. Like on Friday night, we had a lot of the Greek fraternity members from different local universities and colleges come to the show. And it's been really amazing to have that kind of vocal response in the audience, you know, having the mm-hmms and the laughter. Because I know Kenan, he wrote the play, you know, so that he could show a new face of black men and improve the representation and visibility of our stories. So it's been really great just to have, like, the people that he's been targeting with this story actually show up.
Yeah, and there's an amazing cast. So talk a little bit about some of the other characters. Like, so when people go to see this show, I mean, you've got other characters, like you have Wisdom, depression, passion, happiness, love. I mean, talk about some of those other characters.
I think what's really amazing about the show is that we all have these allegorical names, but we're not solely defined by that. For example, you have depression, who you would think would just like mope around, sit around, never get out of bed. But actually, he's a working man. He's a guy who has to like make a living to take care of his family. He's working at a job that isn't necessarily what he envisioned he'd be doing with his life. And in some ways, he's actually one of the funnier characters in the play because of that. And then you have Happiness, who on the surface you think would just be smiling and bright all the time. But actually, he's a guy who's coming to terms with what it means to be a black man who came from an upwardly mobile home. So it's each and every person on stage has these contradictions that make them so interesting. And I think what Keenan wanted to do is to show that each and every one of us contain all of these things. Inside of me, I have lust and love. I have depression and happiness. And we can't just be defined by one thing. None of us fit in a box. None of us are stereotyped.
Yeah, and you know, playwright Brother Scott, his poetry was amazing. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. And do you think, was that one of the deciding factors of you coming aboard to the production?
Keenan, like me, is a New York native. And I think it's really rare to see someone capture the language and the rhythm of New York City in an authentic way. And because Keenan is also a spoken word poet, that actually was his first introduction to the performing arts. He's given the show this kind of inner pulse and drive to it, that it feels very much the language of the streets. But it's not just, you know, unique to New York City, because this could be Harlem, this could be Baltimore, this could be Atlanta, New Orleans, wherever. And I think it's such a gift as a black actor to be working on language like this, on text. You know, when you think about the theatrical giants, you think of August Wilson, you think of Lynn Nottage, Susan Laurie Parks, these people who have this rich language. And it feels like Keenan is continuing that tradition with this play.
Yeah. So you got to talk about Steve H. Brodnack's style as a director.
Steve is all about creating a room of play, a safe space where you can try things, fail, laugh. He doesn't want the room to feel like work, because really this show is about community. It's about love. It's about inclusivity. And he wanted the room to very much be a place where all are welcome. And actually what he made sure to specify is that the women are actually upheld, are honored, that their voice should be the loudest ones in the room, because you have this room that is dominated by these seven men, when in fact it's the black women in our community that have been the bedrock, that have been holding things down. So we had Holly Wright, who's one of the dancers and the dance captain. We had Ashley Pierre-Louis, another dancer. We had Millicent, our choreographer. Bianca, our assistant, our associate director, I should say. And he wanted to make sure that they had the loudest voice in the room, that they could actually tell us, you know, what things we were honoring, where our blind spots were. And it was just an honor to work with a black man who, you know, wanted to make sure that we were respecting our sisters, even if this show can be viewed as a story of a black man.
You know, Rinaldo, you got to talk about that amazing set and the aspect of tech rehearsal and just dealing with that set, because, you know, some of you guys had to climb on the set and you had to do all this, you know, you had to go through the audience, you had to do all that. So talk about your tech rehearsal. I mean, was that just a typical week or was it longer?
Oh, wow. So the set was designed by Robert Brill, who's a Tony-nominated set designer. And if you come to see the show, you'll just see the massive scale and size of it. And it's something that's like ever-present and looming over the entire evening. And what is interesting about coming to Baltimore is that the dimensions of the theater are very different from Syracuse. So much of tech rehearsal here was sort of like figuring out what the show would be, because – all of a sudden, we can't make that quick entrance from this side because here in Baltimore, there's no backstage space. We have to go underground actually to cross over.
Wow.
So it became, essentially we had to like restage the play. Like that was the first few days of rehearsal, was just figuring out, you know, where do I need to be? How much time do I have off stage? Things like do I have time to use the bathroom in between scenes? Like questions we never had asked before. But Bianca, our associate director, was so great about making sure our needs were met, making sure we felt comfortable. And it was great just to have that time in Syracuse because we had done the show for 2 months before we even got to Baltimore. So at this point, we knew the characters, we knew the story. It was just about taking it to that next level.
Yeah. In a show like this, how many hours a day did you guys spend in rehearsal?
So we rehearsed 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, and on different things. When you're working on a new play specifically, things change a lot. There'd be days when we come to rehearsal and Keenan would write a new scene and we would try that. There'd be days when we would try out a dance number, and then everything we rehearsed would be cut. And that's kind of the process of developing a new play. You're trying to figure out the story you're working on. Oh, I'm sorry, what was that?
I was saying that's the life of an actor. You gotta turn on the dime sometimes.
Yeah, totally. You know, and everyone was so positive and open. Specifically, Brandon, who plays Passion, his part and his monologues have changed so much. Actually, his lines were not set until the day before we opened in Baltimore. They were always changing, and the brothers would show up every day with an open heart and open spirit and would work so hard to make Passion a fully fledged person. And I think that's really amazing that we have this kind of support system where even when things are changing, we have each other's back.
Yeah. I mean, it was just amazing. It was an amazing show. And, you know, I was going to ask you about brush up rehearsals. So what's the schedule for that? Do you guys usually do that like once during the week?
Yeah. So when we got to Baltimore, essentially what the schedule was, we had like 1 day of rehearsal and then we started tech the next day. And tech is 10 out of 12, meaning like you have a 12-hour day and 10 hours of that you're rehearsing. And really, tech rehearsal is not about the actors, meaning that it's really about the lighting designer having the time to, like, light the show in a new space. It's giving time for the set designer to, like, look at his work and make those final tweaks. It's about the stage manager learning how to call the show. So it's not necessarily about, like, our artistic process or anything like that. But at the same time, it's our time as actors to, like, run those lines and take that time we need to have any questions come up and, you know, figure out where you need to be to, you know, land this joke, make this moment work, things like that. But it's a really long day and it's a long schedule. And when you're in preview performances specifically, you're rehearsing in the day sometimes for 6 hours and then you do a show at night. And then you come to rehearsal the next day for 6 more hours, then you do the show at night again. So it becomes a sort of like a test of stamina too. So by the time a show opens, you're just kind of like relieved.
Yeah. And then you have the spontaneity with the audience and everything. So how do you keep your stamina up?
Oh, man. That is the question we always ask each other. A lot of it, honestly, is self-care. You know, as actors, it's important to, like, make sure you're taking care of your voice. Make sure you're taking care of your body. You know, Baltimore is a great city, and we want to hang out and eat crab cakes and explore all the great things going on. But at the same time, we know, like, once the show is open, we'll have the time to do that. So it was really about just, like, holding each other accountable, taking those breaks, because it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, because we're running until November 10th, and that final show has to be good as the first show. So it's just about pacing yourself and, you know, making sure you're doing what you need to do to bring your full self to the theater every day.
And, you know, a long run like this, what are some of the things that surprise you throughout the performance? In other words, do you find yourself bringing kind of a slightly different take on your character night after night?
I think what's really amazing about a long run like this is you're always finding new things, and also the audiences always change. Like the other day, actually, we were doing the barbershop scene, which is one of the few scenes in the play when every character is present. And all of a sudden, I heard a line of Happiness said in a new way. And I must have heard him say these lines probably over 30 times at this point. And it was just like, whoa, and it made me listen differently as Lust. And I think it's really amazing just to see, like, how there's always more to discover. There's always more to dig into. And there's never that opportunity to phone it in or, like, go on autopilot just because this world is so rich and these actors are so great that they're always trying to push the button, make new discoveries, so that final show, we're still playing. It's still fun. It's not like a job. It's actually something where it feels like a new person. And if you come back to the show, maybe it will feel differently and you'll hear lines in a new way because of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to kind of take a left turn here and talk about some of your amazing TV work. I mean, you've been on the Law and Order, SVU, you know, Louie, Greenleaf, and a lot of shows. How did you get so much TV work?
I think what's really amazing about New York City is that not only is it the sort of the hotbed for theater, it's also a home of so many TV shows now. I think they said that there's the same amount of TV production in New York as LA now, which is truly amazing with all the new Netflix shows coming out and the different streaming services that Apple is offering and Hulu and everything that's happening on the web now. So honestly, early on in my career, I was doing way more on-camera work personally, which was great because I got to work with actors I always admired and look up to. But at the same time, it felt like theater was the place where you could really work on your craft and develop as an actor and challenge yourself. So I made a point in the last few years to make sure I was doing, you know, as much theater as possible because, you know, I want to be one of those actors that, you know, people look up to and talk about and all that stuff. So I feel like New York gives you an opportunity to do everything, TV and film and commercials and voiceovers, every aspect of performance.
That's right. You got to know it all. Talk about your training. Do you still train?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's funny because 2 weeks ago, actually, on our day off, which is Mondays, I went back to New York City to take an acting class. And one of the actors in my class was Maggie Siff, who people probably know because she's a regular on Billions. She plays the wife of Paul Giamatti's character. And
she was
a series regular on she also was on Sons of Anarchy, and I think
Sons
maybe Deadwood also.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
yeah.
And like to see someone like her who was like on billboards,
wow,
still in class, still learning her craft, it showed me that, you know, you never know everything, that you're always growing, you're always developing. So I try as much as I can to, you know, be honest with myself, like what are my weaknesses, what do I feel like I need to work on? All the time, because it's like we're athletes of the heart, and athletes are always training. Athletes are in the gym every single morning working on their skill set, and as actors, we need to be doing the same thing.
Man, you should preach, man. That's I love it. Wow, that's what's up. So, man, talk about your what's been some of your film roles, your favorite film roles?
Oh, wow. Recently, I did a film where I got to play a guy who converted to Islam in jail. Like,
yeah.
He went to prison for, like, a minor offense, and he converted to Islam because it gave him a sense of inner peace. And the film is called Shadows.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to do that project, like, I sought it out specifically, was because it gave me a chance to learn a new religion, learn a new language, because I had to study the Quran. I had to learn some Arabic. And I think learning new skills like that, like that's the kind of stuff that excites me as a performer. So I think that's the kind of work I've been trying to do, because early on in my career, a lot of the film work you do as a young actor is going to be stuff that's really close to who you are, because film and TV, oftentimes they like to cast the person. They don't want you to act. They just want you to like be that person. And while that's great, I still want to like play roles that are bigger and different than me. So that's why I've been doing more theater recently, because I've been wanting to like stretch, whereas film oftentimes just want you to like to be you, honestly.
Yeah. So let's say that hypothetically, so let's say there's a person you know that they've done a few plays and maybe they've done a couple student films. How would they take their career to the next level? What would you tell them?
Totally. I would say, you know, it would depend on what market they're in, of course. Let's say they were in New York City, for example. I feel like in New York City, there's a sort of like pecking order, right? So you start out and you're probably doing like some non-union work, probably not making any money at all. But at some point, all of us want to be compensated for the work we're doing. And our industry has a barrier of access. And what I mean is that the jobs that you're going to want to get that are going to take your career to the next level, you need representation to get in the room, honestly. There are some casting directors that will see you without an agent if you, like, you know, mail them a headshot and resume, send them a reel, something like that. But ultimately, you're going to need an agent. And I think a lot of young actors make the mistake of pursuing an agent before they get the requisite training and credits that's going to make you truly competitive. Because I would say at the level I'm at now, all of the actors are great. Like, no one is calling in a bad actor. Everyone in the waiting room with me is just as good, if not better than me. So I know that when I walk in that room, I have to be working at my maximum potential at all times. So I would say, truthfully, it's about being honest with yourself as a young actor, figuring out what new skills you can learn that can make you more marketable. You can take some improv classes, because like commercial auditions are all improv these days. Learn how to do voiceovers and audiobooks. Truly make yourself as appealing as possible. So when you do approach an agent, it's an obvious choice and you're not begging. You're not walking in the room saying, please pick me. You're saying, I'm someone that you can work with. Because honestly, agents work for you. They don't make any money unless their clients book work. So I feel like it's about making yourself feel that power, so that when you walk in a room with a casting director or an agent, you're not begging them to choose you. You feel like you are enough already.
You know, Sam Jackson once said that he saw auditions as an opportunity to act. What's your take on that?
Honestly, I agree with that 100%, because, you know, we walk in these audition rooms and we relinquish all of our power. We feel like we only have 2 minutes. We have to get it right on the first take. And then we walk out, you know, nervous, our head, you know, hung. And it's like, no, actually, you're walking in this room as a professional. They hope you're the person, because that's their job, to find the person. So they want you to be good. And it's an opportunity to play, to try something new. Because oftentimes I'll get an audition and I know I'm not right for the part. If I go in for an NBA player, I'm not right for the role, just physically, right? But it gives me an opportunity to play, to truly be like, if I was LeBron, how would I play this part? And it gives me a chance to treat it like an acting class, to get better at auditioning on camera or for theater. It allows me to develop new relationships with the creatives in the room, whether it's a director, writer, casting director. So honestly, it's about treating an audition sort of like going to the gym, I feel like, instead of like a competition.
Yeah. Amazing. So talk about what you've got coming up next.
Oh, yeah. So not only am I an actor, I'm also a writer. So a play of mine, I have a residency to develop it. The play that I wrote is called Black Doves, and it's a modern adaptation of the classic Chekhov play, The Seagull. And it takes place in present-day Brooklyn, much like Keenan's play, and it's about generational trauma. It's the idea that the stuff from our ancestors is passed down genetically. It's a scientifically proven condition. So I wanted to examine how that still affects African Americans today. As an actor, I got a fellowship from a theater communications group and the Fox Foundation to develop a bilingual Hamlet with the Classical Theater of Harlem, because I'm someone who's Black and Latino, And it's a project that's near and dear to my heart because I want to show young kids that, you know, you too can be Romeo, you too can be Hamlet, you too can be these theatrical giants that we were taught that don't belong to us, that only as a black actor I can only play Othello or Anne the Moor. It's like, no, I too can be the Prince of Denmark. And I'm excited to bring that to the people in New York City to show them a new face of classical theater. So that's something I'm working on right now. It feels great to be like be shepherding my own work, to not be beholden to someone hiring me, but to actually choose the people I want to work with. So those two things are preoccupying a lot of my attention right now, and I'm excited to bring them to fruition.
Man, that's great. Okay, so we're getting ready to wrap up here. So talk about the projects you've got coming up after this one, and also put your website out there.
Sure. So next thing you can see me in, I don't know if you'll be in New York City, but I have a play going up October 31st that you can see. It's going to go up at Manhattan Theater Club's studios. That's the most immediate thing. I'll still be in Baltimore during that time doing Thoughts of a Colored Man, so I can't be there, but I would love for you, if you're in New York, to go see that. My website to keep up with what I'm doing is www.reynaldopinella.com, or you can find me on Instagram or Twitter at Reynaldo Ray. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man, I really enjoyed our conversation. It was fun.
For sure, and I hope everyone comes to see the play. We're here in Baltimore until November 10th, so, you know, come out and support if you can.
That's right. That's right. Center stage. Okay, Reynaldo, have a good night and break legs.
All right. Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay. Good night. All right, folks, remember to do something for your career every single day and break a leg. Good night.
Under the dark, you pacify me. Hold my breath. Take me down, I won't fight. Beat of my heart, you drum inside me. Somewhere my death makes the sound no one can find.